Hello, friends, and welcome to the She Wolf podcast. I am Devaney Amber Wolf, your reluctant host. I hope you're navigating these times with as much grace and tenderness as you can give yourself. I made a post on IG about today's topic a while back, but I wanted to expand upon it a little here. I'll be diving more fully into all of this in my upcoming book, but the book is not in any kind of rush. I am in an ebb, and I'm taking my time on it, which is a first for me. Instead of going at the pace of my extreme, demanding hyperfocus, I'm allowing the natural ebbs and flows of my energy to move through me. And really, I mean, this is the kind of book that isn't one that you can pound out in a few months. It's taking a lot of research and a lot of moving through my own experience to write it. So definitely keep on the lookout for it, but also don't be waiting with bated breath, okay? Okay. Before I dive into the topic at hand, I'd like to take a moment to ask you to subscribe to my Substack. For those who don't know, Substack is like an old school blog and a newsletter rolled into one, meaning that when I write articles, they get sent directly to your inbox. You don't have to go to a website to read them. Substack does, however, have an app that I do recommend downloading because you can participate in meaningful and fun conversations with me there. And there are free and paid subscription options. The paid option is $5 a month, and paid subscriptions help to support me as an artist and as a writer so that I may continue bringing you lots of free stuff like this podcast. And you can find me at serpentfire.substack.com. All right, so let's get into it. A few months ago, I created a survey that covered lots of questions having to do with the general life arc of fellow autistics, especially late diagnosed autistics. I received hundreds of responses and was fascinated, but not surprised, to learn that the majority of us experienced an arc that was essentially the same in many crucial ways. Of course, the finer details will always be different because we're dealing with individual life experience. But there was a basic framework, and in today's episode, I will be outlining that framework. So, of course, it begins at an early age. We get the sense that we are, in a word, different. Something is off, and it's obvious, but it's fairly nebulous and abstract. We can't quite put our finger on it. Due to the fact that it is a bit shapeless, there's no way to solve the problem. We just know there is a problem. There's a tangible yet ineffable dissonance between us and our peers. Some of us may be able to quote-unquote fit in, but there's a certain amount of anguished effort that constantly goes into this. And even with our very young and nascent minds, we get the sense that this is not much of a problem for anyone else. And this isn't to say that other kids don't struggle socially or academically. It's more that our struggle is a unique and hazy set of challenges that aren't necessarily obvious, that they warrant a great deal of attention. Much, if not all, of the struggle is internal and internalized. And this is how the mask develops. And it usually does so at a very early age, especially for females. By the time we are in school, up until preteen years, we've begun repressing who we really are so that we can avoid being bullied and ostracized. Chances are, however, we've been singled out on numerous occasions anyway, despite our immense efforts not to be. Again, we never really understand why. There are numerous occasions from my own childhood and teenage experience where I was bullied, and I had no idea what it was about. It made me stick out like a sore thumb. I looked the same as everyone else, I dressed the same, but there was something about my personhood that attracted unwanted attention. I did all I could to blend in as best as possible, even down to mimicking others' hairstyles or hand gestures, so I could get by. Bit by bit, the authentic self in any social realm goes by the wayside, and the mask is what takes hold. We aren't even necessarily conscious of the mask because we're not old enough to have developed a strong sense of self that could be covered up and or splintered by such a facade. So it is typically an entirely unconscious endeavor that takes us away from ourselves. This usually means that there is person A who is present at school and person B who basically collapses at home. Many autistics in the survey noted that when they got home, they'd either melt down or collapse, aka shut down. I personally have always been more of a shutdown type, and gratefully, being an only child, I could do this. I just shut myself in my room and tend to all of my special interests or zone out watching TV. Unbeknownst to me, this was a coping skill. This was a way to bounce back. Some children are not afforded this crucial time off of the mask, and this tends to be when meltdowns ensue. In school, we likely have what's known as a spiky skill set, gifted in some subjects, but experiencing learning disabilities in others. My gifts were in the arts, but I was absolutely hopeless at math and later science. Responders to the survey reported all kinds of different subjects, strengths, and interests, but it seemed that the more they excelled at one subject, the more another would suffer. And in terms of energy output, this makes sense, of course, but it doesn't explain the learning disabilities. In some subjects, we just seem to lack the ability to learn. It just doesn't compute. This obviously can lead to a great deal of frustration and embarrassment for us, especially when our peers are much more adept in even in their abilities. We may be seen as lazy, bored, or restless. We may have dyscalculia, which is a difficulty with math, dyslexia, which is difficulties with accurate and fluent word recognition, or dyspraxia, which is difficulty with physical coordination. We may have all of that. Elementary school is difficult, but high school tends to be much worse. This has to do with the social demands that become much more complex and nuanced, which means that, in turn, our masks must develop and adapt to endure these additional challenges. This, plus the increased difficulty in balancing multiple school subjects, a job in some cases, puberty, sexuality, it all starts becoming too much to handle. Hiding who we really are, whilst juggling all of the above, begins taking its toll. Many responders to the survey said that they experienced their first autistic burnout at this time, although, of course, they didn't know that it was autistic in nature. Some said that they dropped out of school as a result, and this also happened to me. Others said that they developed eating disorders as a way to control something in their lives which felt increasingly untenable. Many were diagnosed with anxiety and/or depression, which aren't totally inaccurate, as heightened anxiety and depression are unfortunately concurrent with the general autistic experience, especially an undiagnosed one, but it is not the complete picture. And some said that they were misdiagnosed with borderline personality disorder or bipolar disorder, which is very common. It's no surprise that given our unrecognized support needs, burnout, and high levels of stress, the transition into adulthood is often traumatic for undiagnosed autistics. So many variables are suddenly thrust into our worlds that are hard for us. Roommates, scheduling, juggling college and/or university with work and relationships, as well as social obligations. Not having our safe nest at home to return to, not having the predictability of our home life. Many responders, including myself, said that they turned to alcohol and drugs to help deal with the chaos and maintain our masks, which are now in their peak performance years. And a lot of the time, this alcohol and drug reliance can turn into an addiction and can turn into a major problem. For autistic women especially, we tend to move around a lot and have numerous jobs and romantic partners and our social circles, as we are acutely aware of how we do not fit in anywhere. And our anxieties in many environments are at an all-time high. And no amount of exposure therapy or pep talks or brutal self-critical inner dialogues make it any easier. We turn the dagger inwards and blame ourselves for the difficulty. Our masks on the outside may appear bubbly, flexible, and fun, but the way that we are speaking to ourselves on the inside is anything but. We have known for many years at this point that we struggle immensely in ways that others do not, but instead of being able to blame a neurotypically centered, ableist society for our suffering, we see ourselves as the odd one out and take it out on our sensitivities. Instead of listening to the inner compass that tells us to stop, to say no, take a break, etc., we push through because other people seem to be doing this with ease, so why can't we? In our adult years, we're also likely struggling nebulously in our relationships, both platonic and romantic, and even in our families. They may be successful for a time while the mask is firmly in place, but conflicts inevitably seem to arise and we cannot understand the cause. Something about the communication is off. We ask too many questions. We're too literal. We're too direct. We put people off with our raw honesty. We find that we accidentally trigger a lot of people without trying. We feel the full immensity of emotions, and it scares others. Our need for lots of alone time puts them off too. Sometimes we have long delays in our processing, which feels passive-aggressive, and the list goes on and on. And of course, over time, our authentic self shines through the mask as we grow more comfortable and our defenses go down. And many people seem to be unprepared for this. Who we presented ourselves as unconsciously, whereby we were simply chameleoning to fit the current situation as always, slips and someone else emerges. Often the two people are not totally dissimilar, but the change is enough to cause confusion and conflict. And this leads to more breaks in the relationships, and we continue to blame ourselves. By the time we are in our 30s, 40s, or even later, if we haven't been diagnosed as autistic already, we are bone fucking tired. That doesn't even begin to describe the weariness, really. A lifetime of masking and hiding the true authentic self, bypassing the body's signals and limitations time and again, taking on way too much, aka a neurotypical in capitalist society amount of responsibility, not having our sensory issues or special needs met for decades, and berating ourselves for not being able to handle what others do, it all comes crashing down. It's just going to at some point. And it's good that it does. Many who took the survey said that another major autistic burnout ensued, which led them to either self-identify as autistic and or pursue an official diagnosis. And often there was some kind of tip-off, be it a social media post, a TV show, or movie character who was autistically coded, a book, meeting an autistic person in real life, etc. Regardless of the source, there seemed to be an aha moment that ensued. The dominoes fall, and it suddenly becomes so clear. The realization is at once relieving and devastating. And of course it is. Our entire idea of who we are in the world is shattered and replaced by what is commonly deemed a disability. Some come to accept themselves as disabled and others do not. As I've outlined in many writings on this, I do agree with the definition of autism as a disability in the sense that we are being disabled by the neurotypical ableist world at large, as it wasn't built for people with our neurotype and particular needs. If it had been, we wouldn't be disabled by it, but it is precisely the reason why we struggle the way that we do. And this struggle, post-realization, becomes illuminated completely. We finally understand why we've suffered through our lives the way that we have. We undergo a gamut of undulating emotions, big mourning, big anger, big resentment, big shock. We relive all of our painful and even beautiful memories with this new context. Insert autism here. We may find that regret crops up, wishing that we were diagnosed sooner so that we could have avoided much grief. and the undoing process of masking and being hard on ourselves, as well as integrating into the new identity, takes a different amount of time for everyone. But the general consensus is we're looking at years. This is a years and years long process. And of course, this makes sense. We spent decades erecting certain identities and habits. It takes as long as it takes to undo them and make new ones. But many responders reported feeling that their lives improved after self-identifying or receiving a diagnosis. They were finally able to begin unmasking, being kinder to themselves, and creating a life that better suited their needs. In my opinion, it is far better to know than to not know. Knowledge is power, and power in this case is softness, grace, and tenderness that is well fucking overdue and deserved. I'm looking forward to expanding upon this more and issuing out more surveys for autistic folk to help paint a very detailed picture of our life experience, as this, after all, is where the education about autism should come from, those of us living with an autistic brain. Thank you so much for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please take a moment to rate the podcast and leave some kind words if you can. Feel free to share it far and wide with your network too. It is greatly appreciated. Until next time, love and wolves.